You know, you don't have to always hear a sermon. I believe the Word of God should be read and in a worship service and communicated. And I do believe in the necessity of preaching, obviously. But sometimes we can worship God, as we've done tonight, by listening to inspiring testimonies and music that lifts the heart. And I want to tell you that it blesses me to be here and to listen to what we have already heard tonight, and just to be a part of this worship time. We are going to begin having a look at the book of Habakkuk. And so what I'd like to do is set the background for you by reading the first chapter, and then I'm going to have some introductory comments regarding Habakkuk, and then we'll look at the chapter in more detail beginning next Lord's Day. I want to set the background, and I could stand here and give you a lot of introductory, explanatory comments in terms of background for this book, the history of Israel and all that type thing. But Habakkuk is one of those books where if you do not read it, then you could not possibly grasp the force of this prophet's message. And if we just read the first chapter, that in itself is a message. So we're going to read it, and then I'm going to have some introductory comments, and God willing, we are still going to get out at by our normal time, whatever that is. Habakkuk chapter 1. The burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Even cry out to you violence and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless. Justice never goes forth. For the wicked surrounds the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded. By the way, beginning at verse 5 is God's reply to Habakkuk. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, that is the Babylonians, a bitter and tasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings, and princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up mounds of earth and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, imputing this power to his God. Understand what's just happened is God has explained to the prophet Habakkuk that the Babylonians are going to swoop down on the land and destroy it in response to Habakkuk's question. Then the prophet asks another question beginning in verse 12. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment, O Rock. You have marked them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look upon wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours one more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? The prophet Habakkuk obviously wrote this particular book. The prophet's name itself means to embrace, that is, to hug. And later on, when we get into this book, we'll find out more about what it means, that is, his name in relation to the book itself and to the material within the book. Has anyone ever communicated to you, said to you the comment about, they said to me, cheer up, things could get worse, and sure enough, I cheered up and things got worse? It raises the question not only about the bleak attitude and the dismal, pessimistic attitude toward life that not the unbelievers have, the believers. Why believers walk and live their Christian lives as it were looking over their shoulders, waiting for the next terrible thing to come along. And it raises the whole question, not just why evil and bad takes place, but why anything happens that's wrong to the Christian. Asking questions to most of us is a way of life. And the book of Habakkuk asks vital questions. We can reduce those questions to two main questions that he asked. And probably they are some of the most profound questions. The most profound questions are asked not by doctors of philosophy and scientists or even theologians. But I find the most profound questions are asked by children, right? Moms and dads and grandparents. The questions that you are put to are sometimes staggering. Perhaps the best one, or one of the best that Alice asked, was the time that I was driving along and out of nowhere, nobody was crying. There was nothing wrong, and just out of nowhere, the question came, Daddy, do your eyes ever run out of tears? Now, I'm sure there is a biological answer. I've heard people say, well, I've cried and cried until I can't cry anymore. And the therapists now say that crying is actually good for you. Do you hear that, men? That crying is really good and that it really does reduce tension. And so what the women have been doing all along is really not a bad solution to tense moments. But I've been asked a lot of questions, and I'm sure that sometime or other you've been asked by your children profound questions. Who made God? And then when they're able to think about it, about Jesus being in their heart, how could Jesus be in their heart and also be in heaven? Just this morning, I was talking with Hunter Halkin, and she was telling me, I don't know how this came up, but anyway, she was telling me that little Daniel asked her not too long ago, they were getting ready to give their contribution to Sunday school, and Daniel, holding his contribution, which happened to be a quarter, said to his mother, "Mother, why does Jesus need my quarter?" Okay? Now, Hunter said that she did the best that she could, and she said that she suspected Daniel of an ulterior motive in asking the question to start with, namely that he wanted the quarter. But children ask the most profound theological questions, for sure, philosophical questions. There is a question I think that most of us think about, and that is always on the surface of our minds or upon our tongues, but somehow we often are never asked this question. Do you know what it is? Why? Why, God, have you done this? Why did you allow this to happen? Why does God, as I was talking this afternoon with Audrey and Marvin about their great-grandson, why does God allow a 7-year-old boy to be abducted and murdered by a 14-year-old boy? Some of us feel we want justice and we want revenge and we want an ounce of vengeance. Say what you will about the Arab world, their justice is swift, it's quick, it's immediate. Did you read about the mother, American or Westerner, over there pregnant with twins? And her son, 9-year-old, they were getting ready to leave. They had finished their 7-8 years in Iraq or Kuwait. I don't remember which. They went to the grocery store and some crook started a gun battle with the police, and this crook shot and killed a pregnant mother and her son. Say what you will about the Arabs, but they took the criminal out in public and they chopped off his head immediately. Well, we have a backlog in our court systems, and that would certainly bring about an immediate cure. And I want to tell you that the Bible is for capital punishment, okay? Not out of revenge, but out of justice. And there's some things that are just and right. Well, those questions that just stagger our minds, the greatest, the deepest, and most profound question is, God, why? It's like the movie I saw one time, and a person was going to be killed. There was a big computer in a room. This was the day before the little laptop and the desktops, and it took the whole room to house this computer, and the computer could answer any question that anybody could ask. And this person was going to be killed if they couldn't ask the $64,000 question. So they finally wrote down the question and they slipped it into the computer. You know what the question was? Why? And the computer smoked and fumed and choked and died an unnatural death. They had asked the right question, the one question that the computer could not answer. Why? That's what Habakkuk asked. This is a man of God. This is a pastor of God's people. This is a prophet, a preacher. And he looked up and he saw this dirty, rotten, filthy, infidel nation coming down and stomping on the people of God. And he said, why do you allow this? Sure, we're sinners, but we're not as bad as they are. Why use them? Why? God. Why? And so Habakkuk asked that, and not to leave us hanging with the answer. The key to the answer is in Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 1 and 13. We're going to explore the question and questions as well as the answers more deeply. But the key, I believe there are two keys. One in verse 12. Actually, both of them are in verse 12. Verse 12 says, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? The key to the answer of why is in the fact that we have a majestic and a sovereign God, a God who is in control. I may not be able to explain to you why. But I can explain this to you. God is on the throne. And he can forget, or man can forget, the baker can forget Joseph in prison. But God does not forget. And God is on the throne. And one day he's going to set it all right. And he's going to make it come out just perfectly fair and just. But there's another key to this, and that is also in verse 12 where it says, we shall not die. What that suggests to me is the faith of the person. The faith of the person. Your faith, my faith, in believing and trusting a God. Faith matters when you've got no reason to have faith anymore. If you have enough money, if you have all the cars that you need, maybe a boat, if you have everything you need in life, you don't need faith. You already got it. But when God begins to wring your neck like the chicken this morning, then that's when your faith is going to matter, isn't it? Two keys. God is sovereign, and my faith in him. I have all these questions, and we're going to look at more of these questions. Lord willing, next Lord's Day, I would like to challenge you to do something. Try to find the two main questions in chapter 1 that Habakkuk asked. May God bless to our faith what we have shared in his word tonight. Let's stand for the closing prayer.